European debt crisis is back with a vengeance.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Last year, debt problems in European countries like Spain and Greece almost sent the U.S. into a double-dip recession. Well, today, Spain's credit rating was downgraded yet again after Greece took a ratings hit earlier this week. Let's find out what's going on from our European correspondent, Marketplace's Stephen Beard. He's with us live now from London. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Jeremy.
So I thought this problem was cooling off.
No, well, it's hotting up again. I mean, the trouble with debt, if you don't pay it off, it doesn't go away. And some governments and households and companies in the Eurozone, in countries like Portugal, Ireland, Greece and Spain, borrowed so heavily during the boom that there's now serious doubt they'll be able to repay the money. That raises some very uncomfortable choices. Governments can default or they can be bailed out by taxpayers in richer countries, or they can ask for debts to be written off, which puts the banks which lent the money in jeopardy. So some very difficult choices Europe is grappling with right now.
And Stephen, why could this be such a problem on this side of the Atlantic?
Well, if this crisis deepens, it could definitely harm the U.S. in a number of ways. But perhaps the most significant, according to Simon Tilford of the Center for European Reform, would be the effect on the U.S. dollar.
One thing you probably would see if the Eurozone went into a renewed period of crisis would be a steep fall in the value of the euro and a corresponding rise in the value of the dollar.
A more expensive dollar would make American goods and services more expensive for foreigners to buy, and that would make it more difficult for the U.S. to export its way out of trouble, a major part of Obama's plan for economic recovery.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, Jeremy.
Well, one thing on the agenda in Washington today will be an unusual twist on the light bulbs we use. A Senate committee will consider a Republican proposal to repeal the new standards that have us transitioning to energy-efficient bulbs. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
5 years ago, President George W. Bush signed a law that set a new bar for light bulbs, just as other laws had done for home appliances.
Refrigerators, clothes washers, toilets.
Kateri Callahan leads the Alliance to Save Energy.
Do we want to go back to the refrigerators of the 1970s that were smaller, that didn't work as well, and used about 75% more energy? I don't think so. And why would we want to do it on light bulbs?
She says incandescent bulbs don't make sense. You know how they get hot to the touch? That's 90% of the bulb's energy being wasted. Under the current law, bulbs have 2 years to perform better or they'll get phased out. The Bulb Act would keep inefficient lights on store shelves. A surprising opponent to the Bulb Act, the lighting industry. Fred Haber runs Eastern Energy Services.
This is government regulation that was sorely needed, which also creates jobs.
Jobs in research, engineering, and manufacturing, as companies like his have invested in new lighting technology. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Global stocks are down at this hour. The world's largest bond investment fund doesn't have much faith in Uncle Sam right now. PIMCO has gotten rid of all of its holdings of U.S. debt over concerns about what will happen to bond prices once the Fed starts selling its treasury bonds. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow gave back just 1 point to close at 12,213.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing retirement solutions in the U.S. that can help to guarantee income for life. AllianzUSA.com. By CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best. The Knowledge Effect.
The Florida Department of Transportation has released a study showing that the proposed high-speed rail line between Tampa and Orlando would have had more than 3 million riders and would have made money in its first year. But as you may remember, the governor of Florida turned down federal funds for the project. Let's bring in our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, to dig into the issue of high-speed rail and its economic impact. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So how important is high-speed rail for the economies of various regions in the country?
I think that high-speed rail is important in the short run because it will provide a lot of construction jobs. And in the long run, I think it's very important in a region because we have an aging infrastructure, we have increasing congestion. And Jeremy, I don't know if you noticed, but we also have a high price of oil.
Yeah.
So high-speed rail will help move people cheaper, faster and easier.
But there's a lot of skepticism that remains. What is the cost of just leaving things the way that they are right now?
I think there are two major costs. If you look at our infrastructure, it's aging. Recent estimates, it's costing us $200 billion a year. If you look at things like trucks just sitting in traffic jams, so that's a long-term cost in terms of our bridges, our water, our energy. But the other part of it is we need to start dealing with creating a new infrastructure that really gets around this whole issue of congestion, and high-speed rail is part of it, unless you want to be building airports everywhere.
Now, there are 50 states in the country, Chris. Is there any state that you're looking at that's doing things right?
You know, I think there are a number of states that are doing things right. Denver's doing things right in that city. Twin Cities here, we're building light rail. But let me highlight Virginia. The new governor, Bob McDonnell, borrowing $4 billion. And what he said is, look, interest rates are low. Our economy is weak. The cost of construction is down.
Right.
Now is the time to borrow and rebuild our roads. Bravo. He's doing the right thing. Contrast that with Governor Christie in New Jersey. He decided he didn't want to spend the $2.7 billion to improve the rail link between New Jersey and New York. And Jeremy, it's the wrong move for New Jersey because the growth of northern New Jersey really depends on the metropolitan area called New York City. It extends into Connecticut, extends into New Jersey. And so workers could go back and forth with ease and safely.
Two Republican governors doing two very different things when it comes to infrastructure. Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
And finally, how would you like to walk into a Crate and Barrel and find a couch named after you? Well, if you're hotel operator Ian Schrager, who's famous for turning hotel lobbies into urban lounges, you wouldn't. Crate and Barrel named their new white leather sofa Ian after him, and he reportedly sent a cease and desist letter. A source told the New York Post, in this case, imitation isn't the best form of flattery. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. You can go to our website, marketplace.org, to get our midday update podcast. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Put in the time and the hard work, and eventually it pays off. That's how the American dream is supposed to work, isn't it?
We've grown up believing that if we work hard and strive for our dreams, they will come true. And I believed that.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Sometimes things don't go according to plan. That story next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.